Hi, welcome to Stories After Midnight. I appreciate you stopping by and checking out this story. It's called, I'm the owner of a small diner in the middle of nowhere, and I like to give travelers who come in a discount, provided they tell me a story about their lives. Over the last decade, I've heard some really terrifying things. Now, this is part three of, I believe, what will be a three-part series. If anything does come out, I will upload that part, but so far, it looks like it's just three stories. So without further ado, let's get into it and listen to what might be the finale of this series. Hello, everyone. Sorry for my short absence. My daughter came down with something awful, the poor thing. Luckily, it was nothing too dangerous, just a real nasty flu strain. I had to take a bit of time off work and everything else to take care of her, but she's thankfully on the mend now. On another note, while I was caring for my daughter, I did end up freaking out a little bit. Okay, fine, I freaked out a lot, but I'm sure any other parent can relate. And ended up panic researching various viral illnesses and disease nonstop for a few days. And while my daughter did end up just having the flu and not tuberculosis, thank you, brain, real helpful. The whole ordeal did remind me of a disease-related story I was told about 2 years ago. So I thought that would be fitting to share today. It was pretty late in the afternoon, around 4:30, I think, when a new face walked into the diner. She was tall and thin, with dark curls framing her face and a serious demeanor to her. She introduced herself as Andrea. This is a fake name to protect her identity, as this story contains confidential information, and asked me how my day had been going. I made a vague joke about how the day had been moving slower than molasses, and she laughed before telling me she understood. She'd been driving nonstop for almost a full day. She said she was going to some sort of scientific conference where she was on a panel about infectious diseases. I raised my eyebrows and asked if she was an epidemiologist or something, and she nodded, an obvious expression of excitement creeping onto her face as she started to see an opportunity to talk about her work. Her field did sound super interesting, so I asked if she had any stories to share after I came back with her order. Her small but excited smile immediately turned into a huge grin, like if I had just brought a kid into a candy store. I smiled and walked off, coming back to the table a few minutes later with her meal, black coffee and two slices of toast, one with strawberry jam and one with blackberry, and sat down across from her. We spoke for a long time about her work fighting against various infectious diseases in rural communities, mainly malaria and Ebola. I asked all sorts of questions, which she all happily answered until one point where I blurted out if she'd ever had a moment where she got scared she was infected with something. I don't know why I said it. It was probably an insensitive thing to ask. It just slipped out. She stiffened and went silent for a moment before saying something vague along the lines of, "No, well, not with those at least." Let me tell you, that response certainly piqued my curiosity, and I started to inquire further. Not with those? If you don't mind me asking, of course, was it something else? She hesitated for a moment, fidgeting with a loose thread on her dark blazer. She was stuttering now, her eyes shifting around the room nervously. I quickly backtracked, apologizing for prying, and told her we could change the subject if she wanted to. Guilt blooming in my chest as I noticed how anxious she was. Crap. That was not what I meant to do. She sighed, taking a moment to collect herself and took a sip of her coffee, before brushing a few loose strands of her hair from her face. She gave me a kind look and said I hadn't done anything wrong. I couldn't have known that would be an upsetting question for her and that I shouldn't feel guilty about her reaction. I nodded gently and mentioned that her line of work sounded like it could be a pretty traumatic one at times. It was okay if she didn't want to talk about parts of it. She smiled before letting out a short laugh and telling me that her story was probably too crazy sounding to be believable anyways. My ears perked up as I'd found statements like that usually referred to some kind of horror story. I mean, I started. I've heard some pretty crazy things before, obviously. You don't have to talk about it if you don't want to, but I highly doubt someone could tell me something I wouldn't believe at this point. She raised her eyebrows. You're also aware that this is like uber classified information, right? I laughed. Do I look like someone with government contacts to you? What am I going to do? Walk into the police station here and tell one of the three cops that we have whatever you said? She laughed in return and considered my words for a moment, staring at me intently before sighing. "Okay," she murmured. "I guess it would be nice to tell someone after all this time." It was about 10 years prior, when she had a job with the CDC investigating potential outbreaks of viral and bacterial agents. Andrea and her team were tasked with traveling to places that could be at risk of becoming ground zero for an outbreak, and both identifying and containing the agent. Her first priority was always identifying exactly what they were dealing with, as well as confirming it wasn't anything new. Almost always it wasn't, and it just turned out that the doctors there missed something that could have diagnosed it. Or it was a new strain of something already known that was causing unusual symptoms, stuff like that. Apparently, there was only one time during her 2 years working with that team where they discovered it was something unknown. They had been called out to a quaint seaside village somewhere in Europe. She didn't want to go into more detail about locations more than that. They arrived to find the village completely sectioned off, which wasn't unusual. But what was the perimeter guard's apparent order to shoot anyone trying to leave the village on sight. Andrea was horrified and protested the fact intensely. They were sick, she argued, with the operations leader. Of course, the town should be under quarantine, but how in the world are we justifying murdering innocents, especially ones who are apparently on death's door? The leader sighed before telling her that they weren't any happier about it than she was, but whatever this was, they couldn't risk it getting out. Now that she was a lot more nervous about the situation, she put on her hazmat suit and carefully ventured into the town. Her and her team decided to split up to cover more ground, and she began to make her way into the village square. After a moment, she noticed a young girl slumped up against the grand stone fountain, head rolled back and body limp. She couldn't have been more than 12 years old. She noticed her spasming violently and rushed over to help, but stopped dead in her tracks a moment later. The girl was rotting. No, that couldn't be right. She was alive. Hell, she was crying. She probably wasn't too aware of her surroundings, but she was alive. There's no way, she thought. That's impossible. How the hell is she still alive, yet rotting this badly? She wouldn't be too surprised at this level of decay on a corpse someone pulled out of a river after a few months, but a living girl? No. The damage on this girl's body was different in some places than others. With the flesh of her upper body rotten and clearly horribly infected, at least the parts that hadn't begun to slough off her, at least while her legs were nothing but bone, like the disease wouldn't progress to the next part of her body before utterly destroying every bit of the current part first. Andrea stared at the young girl in mute horror, unable to fully process what she was seeing. Just then, another one of her teammates walked up behind her. It was the newest member of the team, a whip smart and deadly serious woman named Elle, again, fake name, who was looking at Andrea with horror in her eyes and tears streaming down her face. She sucked in a quiet gasp. She'd worked with Elle before and learned that she had an uncanny and a little bit disturbing ability to completely shut down her emotions in distressing situations. Was it unhealthy? Probably, yeah. Was it something that seemed like an unhealthy coping mechanism that was probably rooted in other trauma that she might want to see someone about? Definitely. However, it was useful when faced with the horrors that came with her job. She'd sooner expected to see hell freeze over than watch Elle borderline hysterical and sobbing so hard she could barely keep herself standing. She gently coaxed Elle away from the fountain before she could notice the girl on the floor and helped her lean up against a wall. Using the impossibly soft voice she usually reserved for the dying victims of illness and their families, when she had to question them, she tried to get the sobbing Elle to explain what had happened. It turned out she found a family complete with two toddlers and a baby in a similar condition, and how one of the toddlers was a dead ringer for her little boy at home. For a single horrifying moment, she had been convinced the little boy was actually her son. Andrea tried to calm her down, spending the next 20 or so minutes leading her through breathing exercises. Yet she was still stammering intensely and able to complete her sentences without breaking down. Which was fair, she thought. I've never seen anything like this before, she gasped to Andrea. There's no way they should be alive. The blood laws should have killed them all by now. Andrea had to agree with her. It didn't make any sense. Whatever had infected that little girl had rotted away muscle and tissue and everything else she had until there was nothing left but bone. Infection should have already killed her by now, or she should have bled out, or died from at least half a dozen other things before this point. Andrea wrapped her arm around her teammate's shoulders as best she could with the suits on and gently led her back out of the village. She quietly explained her situation to the operations leader, who was thankfully sympathetic. Apparently, she had quit right after the mission. Another two team members had also apparently later killed themselves. Andrea made her way back into the town and back to the girl and knelt down to examine her, speaking in that soft, comforting tone to the poor girl, even though she had no way to know if she could even hear her. She noticed that the major arteries in the girl's legs had been somehow closed off, and as she ran through her theories of what should have killed this girl by now, she found that all of them had somehow been prevented. It was as if the disease was purposefully trying to keep her alive until the very last moment. She sat there in stunned silence until she noticed another figure stumbling towards her out of the corner of her eye. It was a teenage boy, no more than 17. One of his arms had rotted away to nothing, and he stumbled towards her on currently rotting legs. He opened up his mouth as if to speak, coughing up blood in the process before he locked eyes with her and collapsed onto the ground, grabbing at any part of her he could, with his still partly functioning hand, and begging her to kill him. She stumbled backwards in horror, trying to push the boy off of her, as she did, and began to stumble back to the perimeter to tell everyone what she had learned. After a few minutes of frantic explanation turning to stunned silence, she collapsed to the ground exhausted, as she felt the adrenaline leaving her body. Just then, she felt a sharp pain in her leg, and she looked down in horror to find a torn hazmat suit and fingernail-like claw marks that broke the skin of her leg. It must have happened during her struggle with that boy, she thought, but she had too much adrenaline in her system to notice. Just minutes later, she was alone on a helicopter, trembling and terrified as she was brought to quarantine at the CDC to wait and see if she'd start showing symptoms. A week passed, which turned into 2 and 3 and 4. The doctors didn't think it would take that long for her to start showing symptoms, but everyone wanted to be cautious. She couldn't blame them. The mark healed up nicely. It wasn't even that deep, and she made sure to inspect her legs every morning and night to make sure there was no sign of rotting. The doctors did blood tests and took tissue samples daily, which thankfully showed no abnormalities. Andrea told me that she made a deal with one of the higher-ups, who had agreed to let the doctors euthanize her the moment it was confirmed she was sick. Luckily, that never came to pass. She was deemed healthy after the month was over and sent home with a few months of paid leave to at least begin to process the trauma she'd endured. It took much longer than a few months to become even basically functional again, not only due to the severe post-traumatic stress disorder and then the further decline in her mental health after a month of near-complete isolation, but apparently the trauma caused an onset of OCD in her as well. It took a year of intense treatment to overcome the obsessive rituals and compulsions she struggled with. The rest of her team fared no better. Elle had quit, and the other four, including her, were on leave for upwards of a year afterwards receiving psychiatric treatment. The official story at the CDC was that a highly classified outbreak of an unnamed disease decimated a town, and that the specific strain caused intensely gory symptoms, leading to a severe decline in the mental state of those who witnessed it. The rumors about what actually happened was the only thing talked about for a while, as people tried to figure out what kind of thing could possibly psychologically destroy a team with a reputation like Andrea's that badly. Though in the end they were left unanswered, and the story began to fade. She never did hear about the town again, though. It was never mentioned, and the higher-ups refused to tell her anything when she got back. She ended up switching jobs almost immediately afterwards, teaching at a university, far away from fieldwork. She did, however, later, find a news article about a devastating gas explosion that burned down the entirety of a small town in that area of Europe. According to the article, not a single person survived. Well, that's it for part 3. I hope you enjoyed it, and if you did and you're on YouTube, I would appreciate it if you liked the video. Maybe comment on it, interact, let me know what you thought. If you want to do more than that, though, you can become a YouTube member or Patreon if you'd like to show greater thanks. Up to you. There's also a Discord that you can come hang out in. It's very chill, very low-key. With all that said, though, if you listened, whether on podcasts or on YouTube, I just appreciate you making it this far. And in that case, well, we'll see you in the next one, whether it's part four or another story. Anyways, have a great day, and we'll see you in the next video.